to Local Matters, Mountain Express's weekly news podcast. I'm Margaret Williams, news editor, and we are trying out a new little studio arrangement here. And joining with me today is senior news reporter David Forbes. We're going to talk a little bit about the county budget. So we're trying to work in a little bit more analysis of local government and what they're up to.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, we did announce the city's budget situation and what routes it could take out of it and how that affects people earlier. And now this is the follow-up with the county. And people think county budget, and they think, oh, city and county are separate. But
there's a lot that the county does.
Exactly. The county does a massive amount. They oversee social services. They oversee the courts. They oversee
mental health,
an extensive education system. And so it affects, you know, the county's budget, what it cuts or doesn't cut, affects the lives of people from, you know, downtown Asheville to, you know, out in rural Buncombe. And they're currently facing, in Board of Commissioners Chair David Gant's words, the worst time he's ever seen since he's been on. They're facing a potentially chaotic state situation. Their own revenues are still affected by the economic downturn. And basically, they're trying to figure a way out. And they've already called for 10% budget cuts in every department and are looking to dip into their reserve funds and are also kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop as far as the state situation goes. The county, in some ways, has a less flexible situation than the city, even they have a lot more resources. Whereas the city gets a considerable part from state funds or support for programs from the state and will be affected by those, by possible cuts. The county gets almost a quarter of its budget from funds the state has some control over, whether it's sales tax revenue or the state funding some of its social services programs. And so if Raleigh decides that, General Assembly in Raleigh decides, oh, we're going to withhold some of those funds, we're going to make you take care of more of some of these services without any funding, with less funding, that's going to affect things.
For example, you mentioned the State Department of Transportation.
Yes,
some changes there which would affect. There are a lot of streets in the city and the county that are actually maintained by DOT currently.
Yes, maintained by the state.
And that was changed.
And that's been one idea that's been broached, and that, I think it's fair, caused, you know, a certain amount of fear among the county. Gant said that'd be a whole new world if that happened, and he did not mean that in a positive sense.
Right, and another possibility is the sunset, letting expire a 1 cent sales tax. It was temporary. I think the Governor Perdue has suggested keeping that at 0.75%, and the Republicans now in control of the General Assembly want to kill it entirely or let it expire.
Exactly, and that's just the tip of the iceberg as far as how chaotic the state's budget situation is. There's a lot of battles, there's a lot of disputes over how to deal with the current economic situation, and the county and, you know, the city even are also kind of caught in the crossfire of that. County Manager Wanda Green said, you know, she's not sleeping nights waiting on what the state is going to do. And the county commissioners are also adamantly opposed to raising taxes.
And they put off evaluation. They have to do a property valuation every 8 years, and they've postponed the most recent
Yes.
one.
Usually they were doing it every 4 years, and they postponed that, which was a controversial decision at the time. There is, you know, what they're preparing for, according to Wanda Green, according to some of the word from various county commissioners, and especially Gant, is cutting departments by about 10% in whatever form that takes, dipping into their reserve funds, and privatizing some services. Mountain Mobility, the transport service, has been mentioned. But they say everything's on the table for possibly turning over to a nonprofit or a private contractor if they think they can get more bang for the buck.
Interesting. They certainly face some interesting, challenging choices.
Yes, and while the county commissioners don't often attract some of the same notice city council does, how they choose to balance this budget is going to have some very far-reaching implications. And what this piece does is analyze what the implications of each of those approaches may be and encourage citizens to take an active role in telling the representatives what they do and don't want done.
Exactly. Well, thank you, David, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
This is Express Freelancer Christopher George, and I'm here to give you a rundown on what happened at City Council this week. The big news out of City Council this week would be the passage of the new Transformational Development Incentives Policy, which is designed to provide economic incentives designed to encourage high-density, environmentally sustainable, affordable housing development. Now, what that means is that they established a point system whereby if a development is LEED certified, bronze, it would get 10 points. Now, those points are the equivalent of a 10% reduction in fees, as well as 1 year of property tax abatement, more or less. And you can get a maximum of 40 points for LEED Platinum. There's also an incentive in there for the affordable housing aspect, with 10 points being awarded for every 10% of a developer's units that have rents of 80% up to at 80% of median income or below, with a possible maximum of 40 points for 40% affordable housing. Also, there are up to 15 points available for workforce housing if a maximum of 75% workforce housing. Also taken up at council was an ordinance that would require pawnbrokers and other secondhand dealers to submit their transactions to law enforcement electronically. Now, currently, only pawnbrokers are required to submit anything, and they do so by submitting a hard copy to a representative from APD who comes in there and picks that information up every workday. What this would do is this would change that to where they basically upload it through the computer within 48 hours of the transaction. Now, this doesn't apply to sales. It only applies to people coming in to pawn things and stuff like that. And the big controversy here was that it included other secondhand dealers, which would include antique shops and certain consignment shops, as well as other types of secondhand stores like Play It Again Sports and things like that. And a lot of those people showed up to complain that they didn't have the proper equipment to do this and didn't feel like they should have to. And there were concerns over how to handle consignment, the concerns about whether something was purchased at an estate sale in the case of the antique dealers. And so council ultimately decided to postpone action on this measure to sort of revise it somewhat to and to also get more feedback from local business owners. They'll take it up again at their April 26th meeting. Also on the agenda was a discussion of early voting this year. There are basically two schools of thought in council about this. One is that advanced by Vice Mayor Brownie Newman that they should increase the number of early voting polling places for city elections this year. And the other, which is represented really by Councilmember Bill Russell and Jan Davis and Mayor Terry Bellamy, was to, in order to save costs, to reduce the number of early voting polling stations from 5 down to 1, which is what it was before the last city election in 2009. And Russell put forward a motion to that effect to reduce it, and it was defeated 3-4. And they decided actually to postpone voting on expanding early voting until April 12th because there was some confusion over the cost of how much early voting was going to be. One side was saying that it was going to be $24,000, the other side was saying it was going to be $40,000. So staff was going to clear that up before they take it up again. And that is your council rundown for this week.
Joining me here at the Express Studio is Susan Andrew, our environmental reporter. We had some breaking news earlier this week that the EPA has decided to propose that the CTS site on Mills Gap Road in the South Asheville area will possibly be added to the national priority list, which is another way to say Superfund. Tell us a little bit about that.
There was an assembled gathering of residents and reporters last night, March 9th, Thursday night, at the Skyland Fire Department to hear three EPA officials relay the news that the Mills Gap Road CTS of Asheville site is finally proposed for listing on the National Priorities List, which means it'll qualify for cleanup funding under the Superfund, a collection of funds funded both by taxpayers and by polluters.
Would you say they stopped short of saying what the time frame for that is?
It's a long process. Both the discovery phase, the data collection phase, and the remediation or cleanup phase can take years.
And we're already decades into this. As early as the 1990s, they started testing water in the area. There were several residents' families who their wells were heavily contaminated with primarily trichloroethylene, or TCE.
And benzene and a cocktail of other organic compounds. But the bottom line really is that it can still take a very long time, and so residents proposed a sort of a counter-proposal as that EPA remediation and Superfund process unfolds. They'd like to continue that EPA emergency response order that was issued back in 1999, which can offer very quick remediation in areas where residents have wells that are known to be contaminated. They can get supplied with bottled water, and they can be provided lines to supply civic, municipal water.
Most of that has already happened, though. You have the Robinson family and the Rice family, they're already on, quote, city water. There's one other well that wasn't tested until last year, unfortunately, was missed in some of the earlier testing phases. And groundwater, they're still finding this in groundwater and some surface streams in the area.
There's concern on the part of residents who have done some testing on their own, along with a class of students from a UNCA environmental studies class, which has continued to find very high levels of contaminants in surface water flowing off the site. So concern remains high that there is, in the words of Tate McQueen, the activist from the Citizens Monitoring Council, a mother load of contamination still on plant property that continues to feed potential water supply sources flowing off-site.
And it's been a process that's already been going on for several decades. CTS operated an electroplating plant there from about in the 1950s to the mid-1980s, and it's still uncertain, at least to the EPA and the state officials, where that contamination is coming from. There's been no direct find, some people would say otherwise, of where that's coming from. There's been no remediation or cleanup of the site other than some vapor extraction or ozonation process they've been using. There's been no digging up, none of that kind of activity which some of the residents are calling for.
That's right. There was a soil vapor extraction system that was put in place inside the building that about 9 months ago came offline when presumed copper thieves broke into the facility and damaged the soil vapor extractor so that it was no longer functioning, and it hasn't been repaired since that time.
And there are also several lawsuits going on. Some residents recently filed a lawsuit. Who are they suing? CTS? And are they also complaining?
That's right. There is a group of 16 individuals and families that have been most heavily impacted by the contamination, which last month brought a complaint in federal court, which is just beginning to play out now. We'll have to see how that turns out.
And last year, CTS, which is based in Indiana, filed a lawsuit against Mills Gap Road Associates, who bought much of the land and sold some of it. There's a residential development called South Chase on part of that land. But CTS sued them, trying to pull them into the possibility of having to pay for some of this cleanup, and we haven't heard any updates on that lawsuit either.
That's right.
So stay tuned, because this issue just keeps bubbling up. Thanks for joining us, Susan, and we'll talk some more about it.
Catch you next time.
All right, that's it for Local Matters today. Stay tuned, because there's always something happening somewhere. Thanks. Thank you.